You're listening to Casual Swim.
Thanks for talking to Casual Swim Cinematic Orchestra. So congrats on To Believe. I guess it's been a while between drinks. You probably get asked that a lot. But how have you changed in that time, and how has the environment around you changed over those years?
Blimey, big question. The album has taken a minute. We've actually purposely not rushed this record. Every Cinematic Orchestra record takes its time, and we are more concerned about the longevity of a body of work, a document of the music. And yes, To Believe is the new release, and a lot has changed in the world over the last 12 years since Muffler to Believe. And what can I say about it?
Like, I guess in terms of the influences around you, so you guys have collaborated with a lot of people. So Maneuver's been a consistent, but there's also Miguel Atwood, and he rolls with the whole Brain Feeder, that whole LA jazz scene. Has that kind of sound influenced you guys a little bit?
Yeah, well, I actually live in LA, so definitely was lucky enough to see a lot of that, what is now an internationally known thing, evolve over the last few years. Knew Miguel Atwood Ferguson from a while ago, and so that was how he got involved in this record. But I think, you know, a lot has changed, and like Jay said, it was we were definitely not trying to rush anything. It was a steady process, but it ended up, you know, when you get towards the finish line with a record, or when it starts to become not just music but ideas and lyrics, that certainly the world around us came in and kind of had a conversation. We had a conversation with ourselves and everyone we were working with about what's going on in the world and how we feel about it, and maybe how we structure some interesting questions which make people think a bit.
So there's kind of strap line where it's about, is it Belief in 2019, and how that came about? In terms of how you got to that point, was that something you started with, or was that something when you made the body of music, you then kind of referenced and said, actually, this works really well under that construct?
I mean, it started really with me and Jay talking about it a lot and thinking about music and the role that it can play in culture and society, but the actual words To Believe came out of the collaboration with Moses Sumney, which is obviously the title track from the record, and I'm happy to say that was a very open, Moses is a really lovely person to work with because he's very open and giving, and meaning he'll contribute a lot, but he'll also allow a conversation to happen. And so that really came from the three of us working together on that track. And then I think Jay, once we'd finished it, Jay was like, this is the name of the album. And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah, the title just obviously came, you know, just to kind of rewind a second, every cinematic record is about kind of exploration. It's about finding a new way to express and broaden the palette and the voice of the cinematic orchestra. It's always a challenge, every record, and it's always about putting new challenges in front of us. So during the process, as Dom was saying, with working with Moses, the title track and the album title seemed really appropriate and apparent based on social and cultural and political kind of like landscape. And for everyone just to stop for a second and to kind of like to think about where we're going, what we're doing, because everything is moving extremely fast at the moment, kind of socially and culturally. So the title, the timing, everything just seemed to naturally come together.
So how did the album, from a production perspective, manifest? Like, was it like the previous records that you guys have done and the previous music you guys have made? Or was it, it seems to have a lot of collaborators in terms of how did that work between you two plus a whole lot of collaborators, and given the fact that you haven't put out a record in a while, was that kind of, were you re-familiarizing yourself with some of that, or was it new experiences?
It was not necessarily re-familiarizing ourselves. It was more just, again, exploration. Obviously, there's lots of technology that has been developed, and especially in with music software and music platforms. And obviously, the band is still a really integral part of the sound and the performance. Broadening the scope of new musicians that are around, that are coming through, to invite those into the creative, like the studio space.
How was that process in terms of, did you approach them? Did you have a short list, or had you guys been talking about artists that you really enjoy?
It's more generally, it's actually just a conversation we have all the time about listening to music and who, you know, it could be a thought for the future, a future collaboration. It's like these things are just constantly kind of like turning over, and we are super keen to get back into the studio to kind of just do more work. So it's never kind of like a definitive shortlist for this record or for that record. It's kind of like a very open kind of like sketchbook. But because there has been so much development in technology and musical output, the kind of genres have kind of flipped and new things coming through, which come and go extremely quickly at the moment. It's just kind of pacing ourselves and not to rush, and to kind of like to embrace all of the positive things out of everything that's happening, kind of, you know, socially, culturally, and musically, you know.
I guess, so we talked about it before, but we had Maneuver and Miguel. What, in terms of Maneuver, how has he progressed in terms of getting him on the track? Because he was on another one of your tracks, right? And was that process like going back in time to when you were recording with him then, and now you're recording with him? How has that changed?
It's not, to be honest, it's not really changed drastically. When he worked on All Things to All Men, I remember the actual recording session, which was in a studio in London Bridge called Blow's Yard, and a great little studio which was associated with a record label called Nine Bar, which no longer exists. But Rodney had the instrumental track for a good 6 months before actually stepping in the studio, and he wanted to kind of like live with it. He wanted to kind of work with it and kind of like own it, in a sense. So allowing that process, his process, to kind of develop, and then it was like literally, okay, I'm ready to go in. And it went into the studio, talked about, he hadn't written anything, but just talked about concepts and ideas around All Things to All Men, and he just wrote the lyrics and then started laying down takes. Now, a similar process happened for A Caged Bird, and it's more kind of like in a way to encourage and support a kind of collaboration, and to give Rodney the space to allow him to kind of imbue himself with the music and to then bring his best work.
So in terms of technology, your music's been streamed 500 million times, and the whole like digital culture essentially. What's your relationship like with technology, and I guess the world nowadays, which is full of like influencers and I guess like streaming culture and YouTubers? What's that all about for you guys?
I often say to myself I'm really glad that when I was a kid, the phone had a lock on it that my parents put on it, and it was actual physical lock. And that's the level of technology there was, you know. So I think that watching it all change, it's kind of interesting. I think sometimes you just mentioned the idea of influencers, and this idea of, you know, what is an influencer? And when you say that word out loud now, people go, oh, that must be someone with a really good Instagram account with loads of followers. But, you know, every artist who's known out there, who's put out music, the cinematic orchestra is an influencer. You know, whether you've got an Instagram account or not. And there's so many different ways of influencing each other and society and culture that aren't to do with likes or, you know, posts and those sorts of things. So I think it's always interesting, and there's always really good and really bad from these moments of, like, accelerated change. And I definitely we're seeing accelerated change over the last few years. I think, you know, there's always as much good as bad in, because we define what we're going to do with the technology. I think we're all, you know, there's reason to be scared, maybe, at the moment about the way we are applying technology to making money or making war or all sorts of different things or making our lives, you know. I think we need to be careful on every aspect of that, but you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's just crazy to think that technology, even when I was growing up, I was half analog, half technology. But the scary thing or the interesting thing is the generation below me or below us, which is pure technology, they've grown up on iPads. So yeah, I think it's just an interesting kind of, I guess, construct. Do you think about context or the state of mind of an audience when you're creating a record? Or is it something that you guys kind of record for yourself?
I don't think we consider to that extent, but I think that we always, and I think the reason that we have a strong relationship and are able to work together is that we both have always aspired to music, which is trying to be good music rather than trying to be such a personal expression, to be, you know, our own handwriting in the sense of trying to make something which creates a space for the audience. I wouldn't care where the audience was. I just hope that they would be captivated and find some moment of meditation or solace in the music. And I think we really do strive to try and make that space for the audience, you know, wherever they are.
I think we was touching on it before, but in terms of timelessness with a piece of music, is that something that you guys try to build in, or is it more subconscious in terms of trying to get a piece of music that will stand for 10, 20, 50 years?
Very, it's conscious. It's definitely very conscious. The music that we listen to from a long time ago to current, it's always music that has depth to it that will bring you back to it, and you can then relate to it and create a kind of a conversation with the music and position yourself somewhere in it. And at various times come back to it, and you build this communication with a very solid body of work. And I think that's really important. And those records are defining in kind of like in art, and you know, even in art, in kind of like cinema, in architecture, there are defining kind of like moments which really encapsulate a kind of the high points or the real focus detail of the time, but have depth to it so it can exist and continue to exist and reflect and project. I think it's really conscious for both of us, but in terms of music.
Going back to that, I guess, consciousness, and what advice have you guys received during your years that have like stuck with you? And if you were a 17-year-old boy sitting in Hackney, London, what advice would you kind of give to them? Knowing what you know.
Believe in yourself. Be true. Work hard.
Yeah, well, I totally agree with those things. I think that be critical of your surroundings, but not harsh. You know, I think we all need to be critical without being aggressive or accusatory about it. We need to criticize our own thinking and criticize other people's thinking and start to... you know, help create. Each one of us has the power to create more understanding and more empathy in the world. And the more you do that, the more you get back with it. But the other bit of advice I'd give anyone is love many, trust few, and always paddle your own canoe. Which is my gran's best saying. And if you keep repeating it, it never, ever gets old. Love many, trust few, and do it yourself. Nice. Look after your shit.
So I want to touch on two quick things. So your music's been used with visuals quite a lot. Is that something that you guys, how did that come about in terms of the strong connection between your audio landscapes and visuals? Was that something that just kind of happened because it was a good fit?
It's not something that's just stumbled across. There's definitely, we both love film, been influenced by film and great cinema, as well as film composers. One thing that I was very kind of conscious of for releasing the first record, Motion, was the same reiteration of the 3-minute kind of radio song. And for me, narrative in music allowed long form playback and time to express and unfold an idea, turn it around, and just to kind of create a journey. And so the immediate connection arose and the name was formed, the Cinematic Orchestra. And it's kind of music for the imagination. It's, you know, there's kind of surrealism in there. There's kind of realism. And I think it can touch, you know, a lot of people. And it's very suggestive and provocative, the name.
So my last question is, I get asked this to a lot of artists, so don't get scared. But how would you want your music to be remembered?
I suppose just to be listened to be continually played. Not remembered sounds like in the past, so it's to be kept in the present.
As long as the music can provide a space for people to experience something which otherwise might be beyond their reach. I think if we can create a space in life where people can contemplate and maybe take something for themselves in that, I think that that's the ultimate aspiration. And if that can happen as much as possible, then.
So last question, what about the future? Are you guys excited? Are you like eager to get back in there?
Fuck yeah. Always excited about the future. You have to be. You can't be scared if it's bad.
Yes, the future is exciting and we are back in the game.
Back in the game. Cinematic Orchestra, thanks for talking to Casual Swim.
You're very welcome.